I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. I'm your host, Wayne Malou, and on this week's episode, I have Shankar Sivanathan, critical care doctor at William Osler and at St. Joe's, and most importantly, a Raptor fan as well. But Shankar, welcome to the pod, man.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I got to say, in the in the top three goals of the Raptors fan, it's got to be number one, witnessing a championship, number two, being in a away game with Nav, and number three, being on the Willow Pod. So it's an honor.
Wow. Yeah. So you've already done it all, man. That's it. You could just you could just fall back now. But listen, before we get to anything else, and we're going to talk about COVID-19 and you know how it's affecting the NBA. And you know we'll end the show on more positive memories and look back at the finals and stuff like that. But I got some breaking news, which right before we started recording, it was reported that Kevin Durant is among four Nets players that have tested positive for COVID-19. This is according to Shams Charania of The Athletic. Durant told Shams that he's not showing any symptoms, but he is warning others to stay in quarantine. I feel really bad for Durant, man, just because, like how many things are going to go against him, man? I mean, he's such a great player. Obviously, we saw what happened last year in the finals. He tried to come back a little too early, and he suffered that, you know, very, very serious season-ending injury. And now he's got, you know, just on top of all that, COVID-19. Like, it's just unfortunate, man.
It is. No, for sure. And they haven't named the other three players on the Nets yet, but the poor guy's been through so much. And to have, I mean, hopefully it's not really a setback. Hopefully he remains asymptomatic and gets through this without any issue. But just another thing on the list of things he's been through. It's tough.
Yeah. And, you know, again, it just every single positive case that comes out of the NBA, it makes you worry about the rest of the league. You know, the Lakers, for example, they played the Nets on March 10th. And so the Lakers are now all getting tested. So we'll see. I mean, I don't even know at this point, like if LeBron tests positive or something like that, I don't even know, but hopefully everything is okay. But yeah, it's looking unlikely necessarily that the league will be able to contain this, just because it's something that's going to spread so much over the next couple of weeks and months. So first off, Shankar, how has your life and your job been impacted by COVID-19 pandemic thus far?
It's been crazy. We first heard about COVID in early January as sort of a potential issue. But even as recently as 10 days ago, it was still kind of not really in Canada, starting to make some waves in Europe and was on our radar. But, within the last week, since Wednesday, when, Rudy Gobert tested positive and the NBA shut down the season, like things have just changed hour by hour. So for me personally, you know, kids aren't in school or in daycare. So just balancing life with me and my wife, who's also in healthcare, looking after patients with respiratory conditions have been challenging. Things at home are tough. And then on top of that, just like constant meetings and phone calls, trying to figure out how we're going to strategize hospital resources to look after these patients. A lot is changing. And I mean, I don't think we've had the wave that we're expecting yet, but we're all just waiting for it to hit. It's a matter of when, not if.
Right, right. And honestly, Italy has been sort of this, not necessarily a model, but just sort of a warning sign in terms of how things might progress. And some of the stories from some of the hospitals there in terms of triaging and things like that, it's sounding really scary. And hopefully it doesn't necessarily play out in the same way, just because at least, you know, now that it's played out in China, in a couple of different countries and near China in Asia, and also, you know, now in Europe, at least now one would like to think that Canada, the United States, and just every other country has, ample warning that this is serious, this is real, please take it seriously, and hopefully they can try to adopt some of the, the techniques to keep it contained. So, Shankar, as a doctor, can you explain what this virus is in terms of its symptom, in terms of its virality, in terms of how it spreads and everything like that?
Yeah, so to talk about the virus, we have to kind of understand where it came from and what it's all about. So it's a pretty young disease. COVID-19, the specific virus, popped up in December of 2019. It's only been around for a few months, but there's been a lot of science around it. So we understand quite a bit about it. It was first recognized as a cluster of people in Wuhan, China, who developed a very specific pattern of illness in terms of how they presented, the changes on their chest x-rays, their blood work. It was very unique, and the doctors in Wuhan kind of realized that this isn't your typical pneumonia. So they were able to investigate those patients and discover this coronavirus, which was new in terms of human disease. Since that time, it's caused a total of 80,000 cases in China with people who are symptomatic, and it's now spread to every continent except Antarctica. When they've gone back and tracked the patients who first got sick with COVID-19, they found that there was a common link to a live animal market in Wuhan. But that was really just the first, you know, handful of cases. Since that time, it's been all person-to-person spread, mostly through travel, which has got it, you know, around the world. So in terms of how it actually spreads, so it gets from person to person via droplets, and this is the same way that the flu gets around. Droplets are created when you cough or sneeze or even talk, and anyone within 6 feet of someone who's sick could potentially be exposed to these droplets. Once a droplet hits the mucous membrane, which is generally on your face, your mouth, your nostrils, or your eyes, that droplet that virus in the droplet can then get into your system and cause an infection. Another way that these droplets can lead to infection is if someone were to cough or sneeze onto a solid surface and someone else were to go touch that surface and then touch their face, that virus can then get into the second person's body, which just, you know, tells you how important it is to wash your hands and not touch your face. These droplets and the viruses within them can last on surfaces for a long time. So they're saying that COVID-19 can survive on cardboard for up to 24 hours, on plastic or stainless steel for even 48 to 72 hours. On clothing, it's typically less because fabric is porous and these droplets dry out, so the virus dies quicker. But on anything solid, it can hang around for a while. So things that I would think about are generally solid surfaces in public places like doorknobs, elevator buttons, debit machines at the grocery store. These are all places that could potentially hold on to viruses. So essentially, anytime you're out, make sure that you're washing your hands to prevent those droplets from getting onto your hands and then into your system. So in terms of what happens if you were to get the virus in you, it can incubate, meaning it can kind of get into your body and start to replicate for up to 14 days. Most people start to show symptoms around day 3 to 5 after they first get it. And the common symptom is fever. 99% of patients who have symptoms have a fever. And then the other commons are very nonspecific, meaning that they can be seen with COVID-19 or other illnesses like the flu or the common cold. And these are symptoms like having a cough, runny nose, shortness of breath, body aches, feeling tired. So, you know, it's really the fever plus these symptoms and a history of exposure that makes you think about COVID-19. So for people that actually get sick with this, most people are completely fine. 80% are mild, meaning that they're, you know, they feel like crap, but they're at home. They're not having to go to hospital. They're not on oxygen. They're not on any specific treatments. About 14% have severe disease, meaning that they're in hospital on oxygen with changes on their x-ray or CT scan. And then 5% of people have become critically ill, meaning that they're in the ICU on a ventilator. The death rate with COVID-19 is still not clear because we don't have a complete understanding of exactly how many people are infected with this, but it looks to be about 1-4%, which is higher than the flu, but lower than something like SARS. And the unique thing here is that the people who are dying from COVID-19 are older and they have other medical issues. So typically people who are 70 and older are dying, or patients who've got lung disease or cancer. an interesting finding is that kids are not getting sick when they get COVID-19, and that's probably because they're exposed to so many different coronaviruses, which is the family of viruses that COVID belongs to, that they've got some partial immunity, but they can still be carriers, meaning that they may not show symptoms, but if they were to visit grandma, then grandma could get it and could get very sick with it. The thing that we're not completely clear about is the asymptomatic carrier, meaning people who have the virus but aren't sick with it. So, you know, this is Rudy Gobert, Donovan Mitchell, Kevin Durant. These guys all have the virus sitting in their nose. Test takes place. They put a swab into your nose and send it for viral testing. But it's not actually making them sick. And the only data I could find about this was that there was a cruise ship where they tested all 2,800 passengers. And of the 2,800, 620 came back positive, but only half of those patients had any symptoms at all. And as we've seen in the NBA, you know, of all the players that tested positive, the only one who's had any potential symptoms is this one player on the net who has some back pain, which really isn't even on the list of major symptoms with COVID.
Right. So the term coronavirus is a categoric term. It's not just this specific virus. What makes COVID-19 especially dangerous and tricky in this sense?
Yeah, so coronaviruses are basically the common cold. You know, you and I probably know that the man cold can be devastating, but for most people, you know, who get the cold, it sucks for a couple of days, but you got a runny nose and a cough and you get through it. The difference here is that COVID is in sort of a sub genus or like a subspecies of coronaviruses. And it's the same type of virus as SARS, severe acute respiratory syndrome. And COVID was actually initially named SARS coronavirus 2. It's a sequel to SARS. SARS kind of wreaked havoc in Toronto and Hong Kong in 2003, but didn't really spread outside of here in Hong Kong and didn't really affect too many people outside of healthcare workers. So it wasn't a big issue. It's also the same as MERS, which is a Middle Eastern respiratory syndrome, which was an issue a few years ago, but again, has been pretty much contained to the Middle East. There's been some talk about a relationship between COVID-19 and bats, and that's because there's a close genetic link between COVID-19 and the coronavirus that infects bats. But what that exact link is unclear. It's not sure if a bat may have bit some animal, which is then sold at a market that made someone sick, or if a bat bit a person. It's not really clear, other than sort of a very superficial genetic link. So because it's different from the common cold, it's not exactly the same type of virus. There are some significant differences. Our immune systems don't know it. Most of us never had SARS or MERS, and our bodies don't know what this virus is. Mm-hmm. So we get it. It's able to replicate because our immune system doesn't attack it. And then our immune system starts to freak out. It's like, hey, this is new. It's doing some stuff in our body. We need to go at it. And so when you start to show symptoms, that's basically your immune system starting to act up. It's trying to limit the virus from replicating. It's trying to get rid of it. And it's weirdly also what makes you sick, is your body doing a good job, because the reason people get sick with COVID-19 is that their lungs essentially fill up with pus, which is your body trying to fight that infection. And it starts to eat away at your lungs. Not the virus, it's your immune system that's doing that. And that's really what makes people sick.
Okay, yeah. Wow, that sounds thoroughly terrible. What's the best way for people to take care of themselves? How can we try to prevent and combat the spread?
Yeah, so it's really just limiting spread is the primary, right? So you probably heard these keywords: social distancing, flattening the curve, and all that means is, like, we know that this virus is gonna wreak some havoc. It's gonna go through the world. It's gonna make people sick. But if we can try to limit how many people get sick at once, it's going to prevent how quickly that number of people that are sick climbs up. It's going to allow us to still function as a society because we've got people who aren't sick. It's going to allow us to use our resources appropriately because we're not going to be overwhelmed. So in addition to really kind of staying at home as much as you can and avoiding large groups, which is now politically mandated after the state of emergency was announced by the Premier of Ontario this morning, you know, there's no more meetings of groups larger than 50. They're sort of shutting down non-essential services to a certain extent. Things that you can do primarily, make sure your hands are clean. So wash your hands frequently, especially if you go out to do groceries or for a walk or whatever. Just make sure you come home and wash your hands. And that means using soap and water for at least 30 seconds. And this is like, you know, obviously the palms of your hands, the back of your hands, and in between your fingers. With soap, soap actually breaks down the virus and is arguably more effective than hand sanitizers. But if you don't have soap and water, hand sanitizers are a perfectly good option. If you're not feeling well, in terms of preventing spread, cough into your elbow or cover your cough or your sneeze. Don't touch your face. You know, it's winter. We're still wearing hoodies and scarves. So it's tempting to touch your face, but try your best not to touch your face, because if you've got virus on your hands and you touch your face or your nose or your mouth, that gives the virus the opportunity to get into your system. Mm-hmm. If you are at work and, you know, there's a common area with a bowl of M&Ms, don't be grabbing M&Ms because who knows who touched them 2 days ago. And that person may be asymptomatic and may carry the virus, but they're still at work. The thing I wanted to talk about was actually wearing a mask, which I've seen a lot of people doing, and it seems intuitive. Like, you know, people are sick, you want to wear a mask and not get sick. Mm-hmm. But it's actually not effective for a few reasons. So the mask itself can become saturated from your breathing and just kind of the environment within a couple of hours. And then on top of that, just having a mask, it's irritating. So you're going to want to touch your face. And by manipulating the mask and touching your face, you're actually potentially exposing yourself to this virus and being exposed to it. So masks are not helpful. And they also take away from being vigilant in other ways, like washing your hands and avoiding contact. So really, you know, if I could boil it down to two things, it's social distancing. Mm-hmm. There was an article in the Washington Post that like ran through four different simulations of how this thing can spread. Social distancing is by far the best way to do it. And then for personal protection, wash your hands and don't touch your face.
Okay. Is there a way for people to self-diagnose?
Yeah. So we talked about symptoms. So primarily the things that we're looking at are fever number one, and then respiratory symptoms. So things like shortness of breath or cough. So if you've got those symptoms, take a second and think about who you've been around, because the next part of it is contact. So if you've traveled, especially to anywhere that is having a crisis like China, Northern Italy, or Iran, then certainly you're at high risk of having this. The next step after that is, has anyone that you've been around been traveling to those regions, or is anyone that you've been around been tested positive or have they been in contact with someone who's traveled? So if you fulfill those criteria, then you kind of fit the case criteria for having COVID-19. There's no way to completely self-diagnose, only because, as I said, like the symptoms are very non-specific. So mm-hmm. if you fill the case criteria, then you fulfill like the province's guidelines for getting tested. In terms of getting tested, there are assessment centers which are open around the city. There's one at Toronto East, which is sort of on the Danforth. St. Joe's and Parkdale has one. We've got one up in Etobicoke, Brampton, and Peel. And there are more opening every day. So if you go to the Ontario website or even Google COVID assessment centers, then you'll get a list of possible places you can go to get tested. Alternatively, you can call your family doctor and let them know, hey, I have this, you know, cold and I have a risk factor. I think I should get tested. And then they can either guide you to the right spot or make the right preparations in their office to have you come in to get tested.
What's your advice to people who are sort of panicking and feeling just anxious about this in general? Because, you know, realistically, it is a very uncertain time.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think to a certain point, panic and anxiety is useful, because the only way to slow this down and to contain it is through behavioral change. Like we need to completely change how we function as a society. So I think a certain part of that is useful. But in terms of becoming overly anxious to the point where, you know, you're not able to live your life to a certain extent, I think it's important to remember that most people who get this are completely fine. So we're seeing 50% of people who get the virus not even show symptoms. Of the people that do show symptoms, 80% is, you know, they're at home. They've got the cold. That's it. I think it's important to remember the people that are vulnerable from this are older populations and people who have other underlying medical conditions. So, so keep in mind your parents, your grandparents, anyone you know who's got other things going on. Like, those are the people that you should be worrying about and trying to help out. And, you know, we use this term social distancing, which arguably is not right. It really should be physical distancing. Social interactions are still very important. So, you know, so make sure you FaceTime your friends or group call your friends or go on Twitter and you know, do what you got to do. But just make sure that you're interacting with people, because I think that's especially important in times where you're not seeing people face to face.
Yeah. And I'm not a doctor, but if I could just give a piece of advice, like, you don't necessarily need every piece of breaking news, because if you're just staring all day and just seeing the trickle in effect of just like one hit after another, like, it's going to have a toll on you as well. So, you know, just give yourself a break.
Oh, 100%.
From all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Because every bit of breaking news is not necessarily going to impact you, you know?
No. And like, Even for myself, like, I'm trying to keep abreast of every new, you know, every new case, every new update in terms of how we're going to treat these patients. And it's not healthy. Like, I put my phone away, go for a walk, play with the kids. Mm-hmm. You know, it's important to just kind of get away from that and still live your own life.
Right, for sure. How is your hospital preparing for what's ahead? And is there more that the Canadian federal government or the Ontario provincial government can do to just help you and other medical care professionals?
Yeah, so I think we're fortunate in that we've seen what happened in Italy, which is, you know, it's a very advanced, very modern medical system. Wuhan is difficult to look at because I think they were overwhelmed just because it was so unknown, but Italy knew what was coming and they were still overwhelmed. So my hospital, like, we've had meetings every day to talk about how we're going to approach this. We've specified specific areas in the ICU where COVID patients are going to be. We've got backup ventilators kind of ready to go if we need to expand our ICU into different parts of the hospital. The emergency department has like a special COVID area. So I think the hospital are doing a pretty good job to prepare for this. In terms of what the government can do, so announcing that state of emergency this morning and kind of limiting size of functions was a good step. Trudeau yesterday closing entry to most travelers was a partial step, but I think really what we need to do is close that U.S. border. The rates in the U.S. are climbing like they are in Italy. Ours are too, but at a slightly slower pace. And I think if we keep that border completely open, then we're putting ourselves at risk for being completely overwhelmed. You know, malls and businesses are still open. That's another thing that the government can target in terms of enforcing work from home and restrictions in terms of what businesses can stay open. But to go with that, they need to make sure that they're supporting workers who depend on those jobs. And so that's another part that they got to work on, is for everything you shut down, you got to make sure that people are protected from the consequences weeks and months down the road from now.
Right. So getting back to the NBA, the NBA has called off the season for at least 30 days, and Woj reports that the best case scenario is looking like a June start date with no fans in attendance. Obviously, the CDC has recommended that there are no gatherings of 50 people or more. And if you just think about it, even if you have literally just two teams of 15 players and their coaching staff and three officials, that's already 50 people. Like, it's yeah, pretty much impossible to do it around that. So, June is like a best case scenario. There's honestly, if we're going to be realistic about it, there's a very real chance that the season might get called off. And that would be a huge shame for the Raptors. Obviously sports are sort of secondary to all the rest of the real life stuff that happens. But if you just think about this Raptor team, it's really abrupt the way it's sort of just been cut off. And, you know, you're as diehard of a Raptor fan as anybody out there. It's just like, you know, if the season is called off, like, what's your lasting memory of this specific Raptor team this season, the 2019-2020 Raptors season, and how much fun has it been to just watch this team?
Yeah, it's been amazing. And like if I were to sum up this season, you know, I would just use like our own slogans, right? Like, bet on yourself, understand the grind, you know, defeat all odds. Like that's what it comes down to. It's like this team was written off after Kawhi left. We're supposed to be, you know, bottom feeders, maybe make the playoffs. I think most of us who actually know the team and follow the team thought that we do better than that, but I don't think anyone expected us to be this good.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of lasting memories, it would just be the fact that we've been an incredible team without actually having the full team. Like, you know, everyone's been injured more than once, poor Norm. And the fact that we've, you know, like had these incredible wins, having the record that we do. Like, I think back to the Lakers game in LA, mm-hmm. The Utah game, obviously the last game of the season potentially.
Both Utah games,
that Dallas comeback, yep. That game in Boston after the Christmas game, like all those games were such incredible moments for even a good team. But to be a team that was not supposed to be good and to have the season that we're having, it would be a shame if it's called off now.
Yeah, and you know, by that point, first off, there's the free agency concerns of, like, you know, what's going to happen with Serge and Mark and Fred. Those guys are free agents. Even Rondé's a free agent. You got to figure that stuff out. And then, like, honestly, the cap might drop down so much that, you know, Giannis 2021 might be gone because you're going to lose so much revenue and you're pretty much not going to have enough money. And so do you pivot then to keeping your players? It's like, man, you shut down all the flights. And so the Raptors obviously are an incredible scouting team. Like, Masai will go to like Brazil to watch Bruno, and you know I think the Raptors are by far the leaders in terms of scouting in the continent of Africa, and Masai and Bobby were in Europe as well. So you know, the Raptors' advantage is drafting, scouting, development, and obviously this really bites into that because you're pretty much having no global activity, hopefully for until whenever this pandemic is more under control. So there's so many issues that might come through this, and I'm sure we'll have time to properly thumb through them. But for now, like, this season, you know, you're at a couple of games and stuff like that. Like, what was the most fun game you've been to this year?
In terms of the game I've been to, I gotta say the Mavs comeback.
Oh, you were
like,
wow.
I was there. I was with the whole family because it was the first game of the Christmas holidays. So it was with the kids, the wife, and the mother-in-law, and there was just this air in the environment that, like, yeah, we're down 30, but, like, you know, there's a chance. And then you know, just with Kyle out there, just the whole full court press, Knicks defense, like everything was just crazy, and it just happened so quickly that. Like, I can't remember the timeline, but I think at the end of the third, I was like, hey, if they can chip this down to a certain point, we've got a chance. And then, like, we got there within like 2 minutes left of the third, and then it was it. Like, it was a lot of fun to be at. So that was probably my favorite game. Mm-hmm. I got to say, in terms of like general experience, so home opener,
oh,
the
my
rings
God.
Coming out, when that banner came down, like. You knew it was going to happen, but just the emotion of seeing that banner unveiled was incredible. That was super cool. And then the Clippers game was a trash game, but the energy in the building was crazy to, like, for Kawhi. It was like, you know, I got there late. I was worried I was going to miss Kawhi getting the ring, but it happened after 7, I guess, probably because of TV reasons, but like I got there at 6:50 and everyone was on their feet. There was not an empty seat in the building, and it was just such good energy to kind of give Kawhi the recognition that he deserved.
I was going to say, yo, those are three damn good games to be at this year, man. So, at no point in during that, you know, when they were down 30 against the Mavs without Luka Doncic, no point you were like, you know what, we might have to go home. Like, that thought never popped across your mind?
No, honestly, no. And like my daughter had just turned 2 at that point. So, you know, most 2-year-olds by the third quarter, they're ready to check out, but she was in it. She was chanting. Well, she said, let go Raptor. But she was into it. And we're like, all right, well, you know, we'll stick around. We're here. It was a Sunday afternoon game.
Yeah.
And, when they started coming back, man, like the energy in that building was crazy. It was a lot of fun to be at.
Yeah. No, I was, that's one of those things where, I was so impressed with just, like, the fan base itself. Because a lot of whatever. Third quarter is a little early for anyone to leave. But, like, it happens, man. And people, you know, like, the fact that in that game, like, the fans actually spurred the team on. It wasn't like the team started doing some stuff and then the fans are like, okay, wow, we got to start cheering. It was like, no, we believe. Like, we really believe that whole time that they were going to be able to come back. And, yeah, biggest comeback.
Which is really kind of the whole emotion that we've had for, like, the last two seasons, right? Is like,
yeah, that's true.
Like, I really feel like we're out of a game. Like, yeah, there's some games where, like, you know, they just haven't shown up for whatever reason. But, like 95% of the games, if they're within 15 points, like, I think they've got a chance into the middle of the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and that's one of the great things about this team. Like, obviously, the Raptors, like, tons of great things. Like, second in defense, they're third in, win percentage and total wins. I do very much enjoy that there are two games up on the Clippers, by the way. But, you know, it's just like, the one thing you don't appreciate enough about this team is that even if they lose, they stay in the game. Like, they've been blown out, I think, once this year, but every single game, they're in it till the very end. And it just keeps you around and it competes. But, you know, this season always been a really great time. But you were part of an incredible championship run last year as well. I saw you in... I'm pretty sure I definitely saw you in Milwaukee, and I'm pretty sure I saw you in Golden State as well. So, I'll just say here, you were on Nav's jet. What was that time of your life like, man? Like, what's going on?
Man,
What's your lifestyle when you're on Nav's private jet?
Oh, geez. I was chatting with my wife before coming on here, just kind of reminiscing about that time. And, like, honestly, from game five of round two, all the way to the parade, like, that whole run was just a movie, man. Like every single game, every single event was just crazy. So yeah, so Nav's jet, I got hooked up with Nav's manager through a friend of mine who had done a couple of trips with him in the past, and they were planning a trip for some point in the Milwaukee series, and it just worked out that it was game five and I wasn't working. And I had this opportunity, and, like, again, it's just one of those things where, like, I'll probably never get to do it or be able to do it ever again. So I had to do it.
Yeah.
And, it was a hodgepodge of characters on the flight. There was Nav, obviously, his manager, Terrell Owens was in town, because he shares common management with Nav, and he was going to talk somewhere. So he was on the flight, and then, like, a couple of Nav's employees, and then there was, like, a club promoter. So just a hodgepodge of people. I didn't know anyone until I showed up, and, like, it's a crazy experience, because it's like, it's not even at Pearson, you're at a separate terminal, and you just kind of, like, walk through, and they let you onto the plane, they check your passport, like, on their own at the side. It's wild. Yeah. And wow. then the flight is just, like, it was short. It's to Milwaukee, so it was, like, an hour and a half, and then we land, and, like, the same guys are, like, guiding the plane into where we docked were the same guys checking our passports in customs. It was nuts. And then I got to say, you know, despite what you hear about Milwaukee, Nav actually got a ton of love in Milwaukee.
Okay, good, good.
A lot of people wanted pictures. A lot of people wanted autographs from Nav. He had a couple of interviews with, like, some Milwaukee news outlets. And yeah, he got a lot of love there. So that was cool. And, basically did the game and then flew back. We ordered some pizza for the flight. It was like Uber Eats for a plane. It was crazy.
What?
And then got home at 2 a.m. that night. And it was honestly, like, one of the most incredible nights I could have as a Raptors fan. And of course, the Raptors won.
Yeah.
Great win.
Kawhi, man.
There's a, oh, yeah.
Kawhi, fourth quarter, and, Kawhi, holy shit.
Yeah. It's nuts. And Giannis was shook.
Oh,
Giannis
yeah.
can't hit free throws, man. If yeah. like there's a solid Raptors contingent in the first half. He was shooting towards kind of the Raptors bench side of the court, and there was a bunch of Raptors fans around me, and, like, we were all booing the hell out of him, and, like, he was shook. He could not hit free throws in that situation.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. Was that the game I saw you?
Yeah.
That was the game? Yeah.
Is that
also the game where you were on Open Gym?
Yeah, so that's if The episode at the start of the season where they kind of showed the design of the ring, there's, like, a shot of me chanting "Let's go Raptors," and I'm pretty sure that's that game.
Yeah. And then you're looking right into the camera too.
Oh yeah, well,
yeah, you know,
there's a picture that Keyshawn Mistry took of Pascal dunking, during that game, and it's and like I'm in the background with my arms up, and that's still my phone wallpaper to this day. Like I love that picture, man. So shout out Keyshawn.
Yo, shout out Keyshawn, the god, the god. I hope he's not stranded in Florida. Because he's working with MLB and stuff, and spring training was down there. So that's amazing. So night of the championship, where were you? How are you celebrating? Were you in Oakland?
I was in Oakland. Yeah. So me and the wife took the kids down for game 3 and 4. Yep. So we had like a great weekend in San Fran. Me and the wife went to games. It was a lot of fun. And the game 6, I had actually got tickets to before the finals was even set, just with a buddy of mine. So we went down, and then like the game itself was just, I mean, it was surreal to be there.
Yeah.
And then I kind of like weaseled my way down to court level for the trophy presentation and all of that. So that was incredible. Pascal and Kyle came by and kind of like gave all the Raptors fans high fives at the end of the game. So that was crazy. And then after the game, we had gone back to the hotel that they were staying at for the other games, because they're like, hey, they're probably at the same hotel. So the security for game 6 was a lot more stringent than the first couple of games. So we couldn't get into the actual hotel, but we were there like as the bus pulled up with all the players coming off. And there was probably a good like 40, 50 Raptors fans there, just like chanting and hollering and everyone. And like, you know, they were having a great time, and it was pretty cool. It was awesome.
Yeah. No, honestly, that's probably, if I, something like when I'm 80 years old and I forget everything that happened in my life, the one thing that's going to stick with me is just like the Raptor fans after the game, like three full sections of Raptor fans too. Like it was not like mostly Warriors fans. I mean, it was obviously, but like there were real significant numbers of Raptor fans, and like,
for sure,
just going nuts for like an hour. No one's even out there. It's just like, just people just singing and chanting. It's actually like, it was so beautiful, man.
No, like I think game 4 is the game where like I saw you and I hollered at you, and it was because it was a Friday night, and I think a lot of people had come down, and you're right, it was three full sections. It was probably a good like 2,000 Raptors fans in that corner.
Yeah.
And everyone had come down, were singing No Canada, chanting Let's Go Raptors.
Yeah. No, I died when they started chanting CBC, man, because they had a CBC reporter. People were like, yeah, we'll chant CBC. I'm like, yo, where's the support when people vote? Yeah, man, that's incredible. That's incredible. Yeah, man, damn. Honestly, you know, I'm not sure the Raptors would have gone like to the finals this year, and I'm not really sure what would have happened then. But like, that's the thing with this. Going back to this thing, man, it's just like this team, like they carried themselves like champions. Like it didn't matter like the circumstance or whatever. Like this team never cried about any of that shit. Like Kawhi's not here. You know, various members of the actual rotation's not on here. You know, Mark's missing half the season. It doesn't matter. Like, you know, they really played like champions. And honestly, just as a Raptor fan, like having seen a lot of like, not mentally weaker teams, but just sort of just having that doubt in terms of like, can this team do it? They've never done it before. We've seen them fail spectacularly. The dissonance between like watching like 2014 to 2018 Raptors, which were good teams that made the playoffs, versus like this one, which is post championship. Like, I don't even know which team necessarily was better between 2018 or 2020, but like, I know for a fact that the mentality of this 2020 team was just so, so superior to what came before. And it was just like refreshing as a Raptor fan, you know, because we never really had that confidence and that swagger before.
That's exactly it. It's just the confidence of walking into any building, any game, and just being like, hey, we're champions. We can win this.
Yeah. Unbelievable feeling, man. God, I miss the Raptors, man.
I know. I hear you,
man. I miss the Raptors, man.
Hey, if they get back to basketball, and let's say they've got like 6 weeks to finish the season in the playoffs, like a couple of circumstances I've heard, like there's one like possible March Madness type thing where it's just like every team is in it and it's just a one-off to get the championship.
Yeah.
There's another where it's just like whoever's, you know, top eight in each conference now gets into the playoff, and it's like a 5-5 for the first two rounds and 7-7 for the finals. What format do you think would be reasonable, and what do you think makes the most sense?
I think I'm really concerned about quality of play. You know what I mean? Like, if you just go straight back into the season and then you just say, okay, to make it logistically easier, we're only going to host the playoffs. The regular season has just ended. We're going to go straight into the playoffs. Like, it's going to be tough. I think you really need to give players, like, a solid, like, 2 weeks just to, like, get them their bodies ready and, like, mentally, you know, ready to play and stuff like that. Like, I think, you know, it's already pretty hard right now to get players to sort of manage their bodies, and we're seeing all the load management and stuff like that. Yeah, to just go from, like, being quarantined, which I'm like, I don't know, man. Maybe players are probably acting differently in quarantine than a regular human is. But, like, it's just a lot of sitting and eating, and you're like, you look at your Fitbit, and you're like, oh, I have taken 800 steps today. Like, you know, it's hard to go from that to, like, all right, we're going to play for, like, an actual playoff game. So,
yeah.
I think you got to give them, like, at least 2 weeks of, you know, I don't really care about the rest of the regular season. That doesn't really matter to me. And then, you know, in the playoffs, like, I think, yeah, 5-5 and then 7-7 makes the most sense just because, again, like, logistically, they got to think about how they're going to restart their season because you got to give them an off season as well. And then, like, how that conflicts with the Olympics, like,
I don't really know.
But, yeah, I mean, and it'll be tough, too, because, like, man, like, the Raptors got to play the Nets first round, like, you know, I don't think it's going to last for, like, 4 months. They're going to have COVID for 4 months, but,
yeah.
I don't know. It'll be a weird year, though. Like, it's ultimately, it is going to be an asterisk on the whole season for sure. But
For sure.
But there's so much to play for, too. You know, like, if you look at it, like, Pascal has an All-NBA case. Low-key, Kyle Lowry has an All-NBA case.
Yeah.
And if Kyle gets the second All-NBA, then, you know, that really bolsters his Hall of Fame case.
Yeah.
You know, you're looking at just, like, you know, OG has an All-Defensive case. Nick Nurse, I think, is pretty much the favorite to win Coach of the Year.
For sure, yeah.
So there's a lot to play for in that perspective. And then, like, you know, in terms of just, like, the league as a whole, like, I don't, LeBron, whatever, like, he's been playing at an amazing level. This might be one of his last chances to win a title. And I would have loved to see what the Lakers could have done, you know, with that group, especially in a potential matchup with the Clippers. So, you know, and then, you know, there, you know, Eric Bledsoe and Chris Middleton had another chance to choke. So
that's right. Yeah.
Could have seen that as well. So hopefully the season's still on, but damn, I mean, it's a lot going on right now. It's a crazy time. Anyway, Shekhar, we've taken a ton of your time. You know, we really, really appreciate not just you coming on the podcast, but just, like, what you do in general out there on the front lines. Where can people find you and your work? Do you want to plug anything? Any last words?
I mean, anything to plug would really be just staying safe, guys. Like, you know, take care of yourself, wash your hands, don't touch your face. If you've got anyone who's older in your life, and you want to, you know, take care of them without actually visiting them or potentially exposing them, you know, get them Uber Eats, make sure that they've got groceries and stuff like that, drop them off at their front door, make sure they're safe. But other than that, just try to keep yourselves safe and healthy. And I think if we do that, then we'll get through this.
Yeah.
You can find me on Twitter, Shanks Online, Instagram, Dr. Shanks. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, thank you so much, man.
Thanks, Will. Appreciate it. Take care.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.